Dear friends of AA, Al-Anon and Alateen, my name is Frank and I'm a grateful member of Al-Anon.
Hi, Frank.
Thank you. First of all, I want to thank the Convention Commission for allowing me the opportunity to speak on this Sunday morning about how it was before and how it is like after Al-Anon found me. Because I didn't find Al-Anon, Al-Anon found me. I'll explain that later. I think a couple of weeks ago I received an email from Marlene. I think many of you know Marlene. I found out on that email that her real name is not Marlene but Helene. I didn't know that. Anyhow, Marlene asked me to speak on a Sunday morning. And in the mail was also the name of Diane. And Marlene and Diane, I know them for many years. They are great Al-Anon people, so I couldn't refuse. I like to tell my story from the very beginning. I was born on the 4th of July. Yeah, it's. I like the Americans for throwing a party every year for that occasion. But anyhow, I was born on the 4th of July, 1951. And in that time, it was after, not so long after World War II, families were all big. Where I was born, my friends in the street where I was born were all families of 5, 6, 7, 8 children. I was a rarity, I was an only child. And moreover, my parents, they lived in the house of my mother's mother. So I had three parents. And I was a spoiled child. But back then, it felt like a warm bath, of course. Subconsciously, I developed the capacity to live up to three different sets of expectations of three different adults. In other words, already as a young child, I became a full-blown people pleaser. Also, I like to tell white lies. It's a strange word. Why a strange word, white lie? Why not say just lie? I like to tell lies. I wanted the reality to look better than it did. Did you break that fast, Frank? No, Ma, it just fell down. Sometimes the law of gravity works in different ways. Being spoiled as a young child may have felt like a warm bath, but it became a handicap when I went to live in a student home when I was 19 years old. At home, I didn't have to do one thing. Sometimes my mother sent me to the grocery store with a note, you know? And that's, I think, all I've done in my childhood to help out in the home. So when I came to live in a student's home with four other boys who came from big families, they all were handy at things, and I couldn't even cook. So I learned some hard lessons in this student house. When I was 21, I met my wife Mariska in a student's club. She walked into the bar looking beautiful, well-dressed, and she said to the barkeeper, "This round's on me." Yeah. There were about 10 people sitting in the bar, including me. So I assumed, oh boy, she's not only beautiful, she's rich too. But that was not the case. Yeah. It was like this. She had a study allowance for 1 year, And her father, who I learned to know later on and had great respect for, this man, he died at a young age. Her father tried to convince her that it was better that he gave her every month 1/12 or something of the total allowance. But she convinced her father to give her the whole, and she finished that in 2 months, she told me. Anyhow, we became a couple and we went to live together in a little house that we rented. We were still students then at a teacher school in Tilburg, my hometown. Later on, we became teachers and we bought a bigger house. In the beginning, I didn't notice anything strange about her drinking, because we were students, and an important activity of students is going out 3 or 4 nights a week and drinking a lot. Although I myself, I have always been a moderate drinker because I didn't want to give up control. I was a control freak. What I especially didn't like was unexpected things to happen. Things should happen in an orderly, planned way. I like to know what happens before it happens. And yeah, imagine living with an alcoholic. So, slowly, I started having problems with Mariska's drinking. We were always the last people in a bar or at a party leaving. Sometimes I had a feeling we had to be pushed out. When we were in the bar, the stools were already on the bar, you know, and they were wiping the floor for the third time, looking madly at me. When are you going to take this woman home? Yeah. Sometimes Mariska got verbally aggressive against me and other people, and I felt very ashamed for that. I felt responsible for that. And the thing is that some people, their reactions on this verbal aggression make me even more ashamed. Some people said things like, "Hey Frank, you can't control your wife." I knew that. They didn't have to tell me. Some people said, "Why don't you quit living with her?" But obviously, I couldn't do that. I still loved her. Sometimes, when she wasn't able to go to work, to her school, I phoned the school to tell them that she was sick, that she was having a headache or something. On those days, I had the habit of writing a small note and putting it on the bedside so she knew I had phoned and which story I had fantasized, which lie I had told. One day I forgot the note. Guess what happened? Mariska woke up, I think, about noon, and panically phoned the school, and they said, "Oh, your friend already phoned, don't worry." Sometimes she would ask me, "Frank, do you think I'm an alcoholic?" And I said, "No, of course not." I had a prejudged idea about an alcoholic. An alcoholic was a man, not a woman, could be a bitch, but never an alcoholic. And this man was living on the street, a hobo, a rolling stone, a bum. Mariska was still looking good, well-dressed, having a steady job, etc., etc. She couldn't possibly be an alcoholic. So I was fooling myself. I knew there was a problem, but the stamp of alcoholic, I didn't like it. I got very frustrated from trying to make her drink less or to stop drinking. I begged her to stop drinking. I threatened to leave her, I think maybe 100 times or more. It never made any impression. She knew I didn't mean it. I wanted control over her, but I had none. On November 1980, Mariska, when she was very drunk, she drove her car in the backside of a parked car with great speed. She was brought home by the police at midnight, miraculously slightly wounded, and that night she phoned AA. So, in her mind, she must already have been busy with the ID. And she made an appointment that two people of AA would come the next day. The next day, she said to me, "Frank, do you know where I left that phone number?" I said, "No, because I didn't even see it. Because I want to call these people that they don't have to come, you know?" But she never found the phone number, luckily. So these people came. It was an elderly woman and a young man, and he came to talk with her. These people from AA, they also brought some brochures about Al-Anon. And I wasn't interested, really. I thought, you know, it's nice that there is an organization also for these poor people that have to live with alcoholics. But I am an intellectual, I don't need that. I didn't have a problem, I thought. She had a problem, and that would be taken care of, at least that's what I hoped. Well, Mariska went to the AA in our hometown, Tilburg. She had one slip in December, I think, 27, 1980. And after that, she never drank alcohol again. So she's now more than 37 years sober. Very good. Yeah. She went to 3 meetings a week, and she started to change, and she started to recover, and she started to reclaim her verantwoordelijkheden, responsibilities, thank you. And I was standing still. I was full of self-pity, I was full of anger, I was full of resentment, but I hardly realized it. And when there were problems and conflicts, I still reacted in the old way. I'm not the problem. You are. You are an alcoholic. I'm not. Now imagine her working on herself, doing a fourth step, making amends with people, also with me, and I'm still reacting in this way. Anyway, she talked me into going to conventions with her. The first convention I went to was the Dutch AA convention in Lunteren, op de Veluwe en in the Netherlands. And the people there, also the Al-Anon people, also the AA people, they were very friendly. They liked to hug and kiss me. I didn't want it. No. I wasn't ready for that. The surroundings there are beautiful. It's a little bit hilly, there's a lot of forest, so I did a lot of walking in the forest when meetings were taking place. Talking about being stubborn. October 1984, almost 4 years after Mariska found AA, Al-Anon found me. Remember I said Al-Anon found me at a convention in Laar in southern Germany. 4 lovely Al-Anon women, almost carried me into a meeting where I admitted for the first time that I was powerless, that I had no control. More difficulty I had with my life was become unmanageable. Bullshit. I was still managing, but I think very bad managing. I went after this convention in Laar. I went to an Al-Anon meeting that started 6 months before that in Tilburg. I was still full of self-pity and anger. And I came into this room, there were five women there. And I thought, geez, women. I can't talk with these women. But I fooled myself again, of course. It was not the fact that I could not talk about myself with women. I couldn't talk about myself with anyone else, women or men. I was convinced nobody had suffered like me. In this meeting, I heard stories that were far worse than mine. I was a little bit ashamed, even. I thought, boy, it was not so bad, Frank, what you went through. It could be far worse. And these people were even joking and laughing about it. Anyhow, I felt at a good place at home, and from that time on, I kept coming back to Al-Anon. And also in this meeting in Tilburg, I started to accept the idea that my life had become unmanageable. I could not restore my sanity by my own power, so why not take a chance with a higher power? I was brought up a very traditional Catholic. Tilburg was one of the high places of Catholic Church in the Netherlands. And when I was at grammar school, we get lessons from a priest. In my memory, it was every day, but maybe it was only just once a week. But anyhow, this man told me that Protestants are bad people. They have hooves and a tail. They are... Really? When I was 12, I went to secondary school. It was a school of mixed religion. Most of the kids there were Protestants. When I was sitting in the classroom. 1 minute? Two. Oh, okay. I skipped something. Yeah, why not? I have only 2 minutes, so I leave a part of this story out. Yeah. Sometimes people that are not in the program, they ask me, do you still have to go after all these years? I answer no, but I like to go. And I my home group now is not anymore in Tilburg. It's in Oud-Turnhout. Now it's in the home group is in Oud-Turnhout, but we moved to the northern part of Belgium. Risk and I, we live in Poppel, and Oud-Turnhout is about 12 kilometers from us. And that's my home group. It's on the Tuesday night, and on evenings when I don't feel like going, I still go. And I always come back in better shape from this meeting. Of course, I can help newcomers by being present in my home group. Most important, however, is I still need to go to meetings. Or else, I will be standing still, you know, like in the beginning of the 80s when Mariska was progressing and I was standing still, so I went back. Standing still is being left behind. So I think I'm going to be a happy Al-Anon member till I die. Thank you all for listening. Thank you. Oh, you're lucky.